Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. We come to you every day to help you improve your American English skills and tell you about our world at the same time. Today, we begin with some interesting information about safety and the Internet. Mary Gottschall has details.
The global cybersecurity market is expected to grow 121% in the next 5 years, says a new study. The size of the industry will grow from $77 billion in 2015 to $170 billion in 2020, reports the Indian research firm Markets and Markets. The cybersecurity market is rising at a very fast rate. The digital age has brought a variety of scams. The scams threaten individuals, companies, governments, and organizations across the world. Computer hackers steal credit card numbers, bank account information, and tax records from individuals and corporations. Hackers steal credit card information online, then use it to conduct illegal activities. For example, a hacker can buy items online using a stolen name and information. The cost of these online attacks is huge. The Center for Strategic and International Studies is a policy research group in Washington, D.C. CSIS did a study in 2014 showing that cybercrime costs the global economy about $445 billion each year. The study found that the world's biggest economies suffer the greatest losses. The United States, China, Japan, and Germany had losses of $200 billion in 2014. Many companies have had software hacked by cyber criminals. Software tells a computer how to act and what to do. Major companies like Target and General Motors have been hacked. Individuals can be victims of cybercrime. Identity theft, when someone's personal information is stolen online, is one example. There are 15 million victims each year in the U.S. That's roughly the population of Moscow. Asher Kotz is a cybersecurity business expert in Fairfax County, Virginia. He said identity theft costs $50 billion each year. There is also a risk from cyber terrorists. Ted Koppel is a well-known American journalist. He wrote a new book called Lights Out, A Nation Unprepared, Surviving the Aftermath. He writes that a major cyber attack on America's power grid is not only possible, but likely, said the publisher's website. The government has no plan to protect against such an attack, he warned. Nonetheless, the U.S. government will spend $14 billion on cybersecurity in 2015, said Kotz. This represents 16% of the total amount spent globally every year on information technology. Dan Woolley is general partner of Mach 37, a cyber accelerator at the Center for Innovative Technology in Virginia. An accelerator helps new cybersecurity startups and provides funding. He said threats on the Internet are constant, so new solutions must be devised continually. Hackers come from all over the world, reported Bloomberg. But the four countries with the most hackers are China, the U.S., Turkey, and Russia. Bulgaria and Romania also are centers for computer hackers, reported Reuters. Communist countries invested heavily in technology talent in the 1980s, Reuters said. International organizations collaborate to fight cybercrime, said Kotz. Governments, universities, and investors participate. The European Union is focusing on this issue. The EU is a political and economic union of 28 countries. Guido Londhier is Deputy Vice Minister for Foreign Trade at the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Next year, the Netherlands will serve as President of the EU. We are putting cybersecurity on the agenda and need cooperation internationally, Londhier said at the conference. Other organizations in Europe work with the U.S. on cybersecurity. This includes the Hague Security Delta in the Netherlands. Ida Haysma is director of the HSD. Haysma said the Hague Security Delta is Europe's largest security group with more than 200 partners. They include corporations, universities, and nonprofit organizations. Some U.S. states are targeting cybersecurity as a growth area for their economies. Virginia is one of them. Many government military agencies are located in Virginia. The region also has the largest presence of data centers in the U.S. and perhaps the planet, one expert said. I'm Mary Gottschall.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Fewer Americans believe in God, pray daily, and regularly go to church than in 2007, a poll says. More than 35,000 Americans were polled about their religious beliefs over 4 months in 2014 by the Pew Research Center. The study, called the 2014 Religious Landscape, was released recently. It updates research done 7 years ago. Kelly Jean Kelly has more.
The Pew Research Center said the percentage of Americans who are absolutely certain God exists fell to 63% from 71%. One reason for this, the center says, is the large population of young adults, called millennials, who say they don't belong to any religion. The other reason is that older, more religious Americans are dying. The people who don't belong to a religion are called nuns by the survey's writers. Nuns made up 16% of the adult population in 2007. This time around, the number is 23%. Among the nuns, about 61% said they believed in God. But the research center said there is a great deal of stability in the U.S. religious landscape in spite of the lower numbers. Within the category of people who are affiliated with a religion, the numbers stayed mostly stable. 77% of the people surveyed said they were connected to a religion. In that group, 89% of those surveyed said they believe in God, which was only a small change from the last time the survey came out. Alan Cooperman, the Pew Center's director of religious research, says those who identify as religious are as observant as ever. On some measures, there are even small increases in their levels of religious practice. The survey asked Americans about a number of hot-button issues related to religion. The survey looked at Americans' views on homosexuality, abortion, and evolution. People who identified as Christian were about 10% more accepting of homosexuality than they were 7 years ago. Most Christian institutions officially oppose homosexuality. Views about abortion were mostly unchanged compared with the survey 7 years ago. 53% of Americans said abortion should be legal in most cases. About evolution, 62% of Americans said they believed humans evolved over time. 34% said they did not believe in that theory. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. White and Asian students continue to do better on tests than Black and Latino students, says the U.S. Department of Education. This information, which comes from the government's 2015 Nations Report Card, shows a long-lasting education gap between racial groups in the United States.
Marcelo Suarez Orozco is an education professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. She says that Latino and Black students face challenges that prevent them from excelling. Both Latino children and African American children are once again attending schools that are highly segregated. They are highly segregated by race, by poverty, by language, by legal status, said Suarez Orozco. One reason is classroom attendance in primary and secondary school. As students miss more classes, they become less likely to score well on tests and graduate from high school. In general, students from low-income families in the U.S. are more likely to miss class because of health problems, such as asthma and tooth decay. Transportation problems and difficult home environments are other factors. Black and Hispanic students in many regions are more likely to miss classes than white students, says a report from Attendance Works, a nonprofit organization.
Poverty, language, legal status, and race are all factors that contribute to an achievement gap that continues into college, says Ken O'Donnell, California State University's Senior Director of Student Engagement. If a student is the first person in their family to go to college, they face many difficulties. They do not have the same support that other students might have, says O'Donnell. The achievement gap, explains O'Donnell, can have serious effects. Students who are not prepared for college are more likely to leave school, or they might take longer to graduate. This means that they will receive the benefits of a college degree late, or perhaps never. For now, some schools are better than others at preparing students for college. At Harbor Teacher Preparation Academy, teachers talk about college as soon as students start high school. Teachers try to build the confidence of students. Another way to help students is to help their parents. Mark Gaither, a principal at a primary school in Baltimore, allows parents to come to the school's library every Monday. There, parents can learn how to help students with homework, check out books, and get comfortable in the school environment. In October, the Obama administration began a program to combat the problem of students missing school. The effort is called Every Student, Every Day. Its goal is to identify and help students who miss around 18 days, or 10% of school days in a school year. Only time will tell how successful this program will be. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By the summer of 1862, the American Civil War had been going on for more than a year. The Union had won some battles. The Confederacy had won others. But neither side was in a position to win the war. President Abraham Lincoln needed a major victory. He was losing the support of both politicians and the public. A major victory would not only help him that way, it would also make it easier for him to make an important announcement. For a number of months, he had been planning an announcement about the black people held as slaves in the South. It would come to be known as the Emancipation Proclamation. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell about Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation.
At the end of August 1862, Confederate troops, under the command of Robert E. Lee, defeated the main Union army at Manassas, Virginia. The battlefield was less than 50 kilometers from Washington. The year before, Confederate troops had sent the Union army fleeing from that same battlefield. Now, they had done it again. With this latest victory, General Lee decided on a major move. He would carry the war into the northern states. Lee took his army of 60,000 men across the Potomac River into Maryland. He ordered some of his men to capture the Union position at Harper's Ferry. He moved the others to Sharpsburg, a town on the Potomac River. He put his men into position along Antietam Creek, just outside of town. His lines extended almost 3 kilometers. There, at Antietam, he would make his stand. He was still close enough to Virginia to withdraw if the Union force following him proved too strong.
The Union force arrived in the middle of September. It did not attack immediately. It spent one full day getting into position along Antietam Creek, across from the Confederate Army. It attacked the following day at sunrise. The Union general, George McClellan, planned to attack all along the Confederate line at the same time. But this did not happen. First, Union troops attacked one end of the line, which extended into a field full of tall corn plants. Then they attacked the center of the line, which was in an old, deeply sunken road that gave it good protection. Finally, they attacked at the other end of the line. For each northern attack, General Lee was able to move men to where they were needed. The northern troops got within 25 meters of the Confederate line, but they could not break through anywhere.
On the first day of battle at Antietam, Lee lost 25% of his men. On the second day, the two armies faced each other without firing. They were too tired to fight. As they rested, however, fresh Union soldiers moved into position. Lee knew they would attack with full force the next day. He knew he could not win. Sadly, he ordered his men back to Virginia. It was now clear Antietam was a northern victory. It was not a complete victory. the Union Army could have chased the Confederate Army and destroyed it. But General McClellan did not do this. He was satisfied that he had stopped the invasion.
In Washington, President Lincoln welcomed the news. He had waited a long time for a Northern victory. A few days after the battle, Lincoln held a special meeting with his cabinet. He talked about the Declaration on Slavery, which he had prepared. It would free Negro slaves in the rebel states of the South. "As you remember," he said, "I put the Declaration aside several weeks ago until I could issue it supported by a military victory. The action of the army against the rebels has not been exactly what I should have liked, but the rebels have been driven out of Maryland, and Pennsylvania is no longer in danger of invasion." President Lincoln said he thought the time was right to announce the Emancipation Proclamation. The cabinet made some minor changes in the document, and Lincoln signed it.
Newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said.
"I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom."
President Lincoln had tried to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. To him, there was just one reason for fighting: to save the Union. Nothing meant more to him than preventing the nation from splitting up. Lincoln feared that the issue of slavery would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. They would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that did not leave the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. As Lincoln waited for a Union victory to announce his Emancipation Proclamation, he wrote a letter to the New York Tribune newspaper. The letter was to prepare the public for what was to come. This is what Lincoln said.
"My chief object in this struggle is to save the Union. It is not either to save or destroy slavery. If I could save the Union without freeing any slave, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, I would also do that. What I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union. This is how I see my official duty. It does not change my wish as a person that all men everywhere could be free."
President Lincoln failed to keep the question of slavery out of the Civil War. As the war went on, month after long month, people in the North began to see it as more than a struggle for national unity. they began to see it as a struggle for human freedom. Abolitionists were active. In speeches and writings, they said over and over again that slavery was evil. As public opinion began to change, anti-slavery members of Congress gained more power. By the summer of 1862, they had enough support to pass laws ending slavery in Washington, D.C., and United States territories. They also pushed through Congress a bill that would do much to end slavery in the states.
The bill was called the Confiscation Act. It gave the federal government the power to confiscate or seize the property of all persons who supported the Southern Rebellion. Slaves were considered property, so any slaves seized under the Act would become free immediately. Slaves who escaped from rebel slave owners also would be free. The bill would not affect slaves owned by persons who supported the Union. President Lincoln did not like the Confiscation Act. He thought it interfered with his wartime powers as commander-in-chief.
However, Lincoln was under great pressure from abolitionists, so he signed the new law. But he did not plan to enforce it. He still hoped for a plan that would free the slaves slowly, over time. He proposed such a plan, but only for the border states between North and South. Under his plan, the federal government would buy slaves in the border states and free them. Lawmakers from the border states rejected Lincoln's plan, and that is when he decided to issue the Emancipation Proclamation. We will tell about the effects of that decision next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. The Making of a Nation is a radio series written with English learners in mind. Each weekly program is 15 minutes long. The series began in May of 1969. People who grew up listening to it are now old enough to listen with their own children or even their grandchildren. These days, with the Internet, people can download the transcripts and MP3s of our series at voaspecialenglish.com. They can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. There are more than 200 programs in the complete series, which starts over again every 5 years. New programs with recent history are added at the end of each cycle. Most of the shows were produced a long time ago. This explains why a few words here and there may sound a little dated. In fact, some of the announcers are not even alive anymore. But we know from our audience that The Making of a Nation is the most popular of the feature programs in VOA Special English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.